Talkradio.org.au, nourishing the soul of the digital generation.
The other adjudicators are there.
Gentlemen are ready. Ladies, you're never ready.
You're not helping us out.
That's why I haven't been in debate tonight.
Needless to say, I won't be debating tonight. Okay. May I all have your attention for a moment? We are going to start. Now, normally, we have a prayer just before we start, but I have a feeling that things are going to get a bit raucous fairly quickly. So we thought we'd do it right at the very start, while we're still in a vaguely prayerful state of mind. And so I'm going to get Brother Dean here to lead us in the Lord's Prayer. Thank you, Brother Dean.
In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen.
In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Thank you, brother. Okay, now a few months ago, whoa, okay, how's that for volume? I think we're good. A few months ago, an article hit the internet, which some of you may have seen, and it asked a question that many women have been asking for a long time. Where have all the good men gone? Now, the author, one Kate Heimowitz, detailed how men had turned into boys, guys who don't want to commit, who are happy just to live at home with the folks, who just don't want to grow up. And that includes the guys that play games to have their wicked way with girls. And, you know, really, I mean, even if those guys did have the guts to ask a girl out, what girl would want to say yes to a guy like that anyway? Men, of course, hit back. They said the rise of feminism meant that there weren't many girls asking out anyway. To quote one bitter blogger, "If the ladies put on the knee pads and oven mitts, then we blokes will put away the Xbox and Will Ferrell's DVDs." Now, wait a minute. Isn't urban theology a Catholic thing? We do all of these interviews and debates about hot topics such as life issues, politics and money, but they all promote the traditional, or some would say conservative, Catholic viewpoint. So, you know, right, okay, so this really shouldn't be a problem. This should be a non-issue for all of these traditionally minded, old-fashioned Catholics, right? Because they're the ones who never bought into mainstream feminism. Now, they're the ones that let slip by the apparent wonder of the so-called sexual revolution. So why? It shouldn't be an issue, right? Well, seeing as we've got probably, I think it's safe to say, our biggest crowd ever, apparently not. Okay, that's right. So, despite a renaissance for the Catholic young adult social scene that started over 3 years ago, there's, let's be honest, not a whole lot of couples to show for it, is there? No. Not a whole lot. Okay, besides ones that got engaged on the weekend. Yeah, the exception that proves the rule. So, anyway. Okay, so, now, on the other hand, you know, we've all been getting advice. What about all of these theology of the body expert talks? What happened to those? Well, what if those expert talks are part of the problem? Have they misinterpreted the genuine wisdom of Blessed Pope John Paul II and unintentionally created an emasculating black armband view of men and a defensive mindset in women that is wrecking potentially great relationships? The affirmative team in tonight's debate just may put that view forward, and I would like to introduce them now. Would you please make welcome, and gentlemen, of course, you will be upstanding for each of these, David Chapman, Jerome Smith, and Gabriel James. Now, behind every good man is a good woman. And notwithstanding the fact that Jabina and Gabe are an item, we're about to find out how far behind the good man are those good women, or are they better than their male opponents tonight? Would you please welcome the negative team? Yes. By the way, is anyone still hazy on the concept of how the debate works as an affirmative and a negative team? Clearly some people on Facebook didn't quite get this, but you will after tonight. Okay, so we're going to go in order. First of all, Laura Bradley. Amy Beer Boom, soon to be Chandran. And Jabina Gray. So, here are the ref's instructions for this showdown. Each speaker is going to have 6 minutes. You will get a bell at that time. An even more annoying bell 30 seconds after that. And then Camilla Socane, our timekeeper, is going to pull the plug on your microphones. And as some of you will know from past debates, we do that. We're not like those wusses at the Academy Awards. After that, we are then going to have a 10-minute break, and this is where you guys come into it, because urban theology is interactive. Our adjudication panel is going to retire to yonder corner over there, so please leave them alone, to decide on the winning team. And, in fact, speaking about adjudication panel, we have assembled a completely impartial, highly educated panel of three. Would you please make welcome first Nigel Freitas. Yeah! Elise Jackson, and the gentleman who led us in our opening prayer, Brother Dean. And I have had people of both genders complain about whether the panel is objective or not, so I must be doing something right. Now, during the adjudication period, you will be able to do two things. You are going to, on various pads of paper on your tables with pens, you are going to be able to write your questions that you would like to put to the team. So please make a note of which team you would like it to be for, and we're going to get them to answer those questions. So all that stuff that you missed. You are also going to be able to vote on the proposition, and that is how we're going to decide the people's choice vote. Just to clarify again what the proposition being debated tonight is. The proposition is that women are the reason a good man is hard to find. So the affirmative team here will endeavour to prove that proposition correct. And the negative team here will be looking to disprove that. Okay, so once again, I would encourage everyone that we want a good, clean fight tonight, but not too clean. We're here to entertain people as well, okay? Yeah. Oh, you know, this hushed, reverent silence type of thing, let's not waste too much time with that tonight, okay? So without further ado, I think we're ready to go. Let's ring the bell, Dave Chapman.
We sit here tonight pretending that our lives are fine, that the world is in order, but deep down we all know that society is in the midst of a devastating drought. This particular drought cannot be blamed on global warming, although we'll see how desperate the negative team becomes. No, the drought that we've come here tonight to discuss is the man drought, to debate why, in fact, good men are hard to find. But what does it mean to be a good man? Well, Christ gave us a perfect example when he gave himself fully to save you of humanity, surrendering his life for the life of the church. Therefore, a good man is one who leads through service. He's willing to sacrifice himself for those around him. A good man is compassionate and yet stands firm in his beliefs. When the dignity of a woman is not paid proper respect, a good man is filled with righteous anger. For that reason, the presence of a good man makes the women around him feel utterly safe. Tonight's definition of a good man presupposes that men want to become the type of men that women are searching for, that women deserve. So why does this theory not transmit to what we see in practice? Why are good men hard to find? The answer to that one is simple. Modern women have altered the image of a good man so much so that they have blurred the picture, leaving men confused as to how to go about maturing into a good man. Women have bred this confusion in two ways. Firstly, women are no longer receptive to a man's masculinity, and with no role for their masculinity, men cannot learn the art of being a good man. Secondly, Jerome will show us the way in which women have set standards for a good man can be best likened to a four-year-old playing pin the tail on the donkey. They've got absolutely nowhere near where they should be. With no constant goal, men no longer know what to aim for. Our argument acknowledges the strength of the influence women have over men. Now, it's not a new influence, but something that's been there from the very beginning. Throughout the Bible, we see examples of this feminine influence, right from the time that Eve decided to put an apple on the menu. But I just want to highlight two. This influence is seen in King David, who, while walking through the palace, spotted a beautiful woman named Bathsheba, bathing in the open atop of a nearby building. He was so overcome by lust that he called for Bathsheba and lay with her. Now, I'm not reducing the responsibility that must be attached to King David, but instead highlighting the negative effect that Bathsheba's actions had on him. Now, it would be wrong of me to finish there, because the effect of women on men has the potential to be enormously positive. Now, who could forget Susanna, who was pulled before the judges of Israel because she would not deny her feminine dignity by committing adultery? In the light of her most beautiful example of true femininity, the Lord aroused the spirit of a young man named Daniel. What ensued was a perfect example of leadership and righteous masculine anger. Susanna embraced her femininity, and through her example, Daniel was able to find the true expression of his masculinity. In his apostolic letter on the dignity and vocation of women, JP2 said that in modern society, women imbued with the spirit of the gospel can do so much to aid humanity in not falling. As a man who understood both the scriptures and humanity, JP2 knew that women are the moral compass of men. So if we agree that men want to be good men, and that they are greatly influenced by women, we can now look at what effect that influence has on modern men. The struggle for equality with men has turned in the effort to be the same as men, and has left men without the opportunity to learn what it means to be a good man. Now, a review of gender traits in the journal Sex Roles suggests a dramatic increase in the expression of masculine traits in women since the 1970s. Indeed, research suggests there is now no longer any difference between men and women in the expression of several stereotypically masculine traits. This trivialisation of the differences between men and women has meant that women no longer embrace the receptivity to men that is part of their feminine nature. This receptivity was instituted when God created both man and woman in his own image, created them equal and yet different pieces of the one puzzle. Men and women were not only called to live side by side, but to exist mutually. By design, man complements woman, and woman complements man. Modern women view men more as the appendix of society, as opposed to worthy additions to their lives. Since women are no longer receptive to the masculine nature, men have been unable to learn what it means to be a good man. An athlete cannot master his craft without practice, and how much more true is this for men, who have been unable to compete at their full potential out of a lack of opportunity? Fortunately, the solution is simple. Just as the conjugal act brings new life through the receptivity of the woman to the man, so too will good men be born if modern women learn to be receptive to the masculinity of modern men. Now, as one of the single men involved in this debate, it is my responsibility to provide you with what will no doubt be the most important point of this debate. So women, especially those of you who are single, if you take one point away from tonight, make sure it is this. I like long walks on the beach, watching private God willed that man and woman will live in complete communion, so that through her femininity, women will draw out a man his true masculinity. Unfortunately, many modern women are not true to their feminine nature, and through the repression of their innate receptivity to men, they have taken away the opportunity for young men to grow into good men. Put simply, women are the reason why a good man is hard to find.
Thank you. ladies and gentlemen. I'd just like to start by rebutting my brother in Christ, David Chapman's arguments. He's saying that there is a man drought, and we as the negative team just think that's untrue. Sometimes as women, we feel that we're in a desert and we can see the water bottle, the Mount Franklin water bottle, but we try to be receptive. We've got to be receptive as women. We're waiting for you guys to open that water, Mount Franklin water bottle, and let us drink it. We're receptive to it, but guys, you need to initiate the relationships, because that is what you are called to do as men, and that is what we will be arguing tonight. And Mr. Chapman, you said that men don't know what to aim for. Well, how is that a woman's fault? What are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to show you what a man should be? No, this is the burden is, and the onus is on the man, and this is what we're debating tonight, ladies and gentlemen. And look, the apple example, you can talk about Genesis and, yes, Eve ate the apple and then she gave it to Adam, but you guys didn't have to eat the apple. Why do we always have to? Eve blames the serpent and then Adam blames Eve. Let's not do a blame game. Let's look at the issue. Let's look at it with honesty and in integrity, because we all want an answer to this question. We're in a bit of a struggle. Let's hit it. Let's hit the nail on the head here. Firstly, in approaching this topic, we believe this statement is saying that women as a collective group are doing something that is making it hard for them to find good men. And by finding good men, we assume that that means finding good men in order to date them and to marry them. We, the negative team, strongly disagree with this statement, and our argument is simple. Women are not the reason a good man is hard to find. No, good men are easy to find, especially in circles like this. The good men just need to start asking girls out. I will be proving to you in my speech that good men are easy to find. Jovina, my second speaker, will be showing why the responsibility is on a man to ask a woman out, and Amy will sum up her argument. Firstly, a good man is not hard to find, and we are not just saying that because we are all in dating relationships. The affirmative team is being very harsh on their own sex in affirming this statement. They would have you believe, ladies and gentlemen, that good men are rare and far and few between. But we all know that this is simply not the case. In fact, if I just turn in a 90-degree angle, we can see not one, not two, but three very good men. Let's have a look at them, shall we? David Chapman. Oh, I beg your pardon. Dr. David Chapman, mind you. Dave has dedicated his life to healing the sick, and in his spare time, despite being a very, very busy man, he teaches young people about God. He is a youth minister, ladies. A very good man. Jerome Smith, the second speaker. Jerome, just stand up for me, would you? need I say anything else? Jerome. Jerome is at every Catholic event I have ever been to. Jerome has charisma coming out of every pore in his body. When I first met Jerome, he started a debate with me on why human life was sacred. A very good man. And Gabriel James. Now, ladies, Gabe is taken, so sorry about that by my second speaker. But Jovina tells me he's a very good guy, a regular Mass attendee, and you can see the halo over his head. A holy and a good man. So, ladies, gentlemen, and adjudicators, we can see that good men are not hard to find, and these are not the only ones. Look around you, ladies. There is dating potential in every one of these men in this room.
So
it is obvious that there are good men to be found. That's not what we're arguing. However, what we have found in our own dating experience is that it is very hard for you to get these guys to ask you out on a date. It seems these good men are not initiating relationships. So let's try and gauge the truth of my statement. How many of the women in the audience tonight have been asked out on a date in the last month by the affirmative team? A show of hands, please. Jovina, put your hand down. You don't count. And now to the women in the audience. How many women have been asked out on a date by any man in the last month? Guys, that is not good enough. The idea of a man drought is a myth that needs to be quashed here tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, as the negative team, we believe there are good guys out there. There's good guy dating potential all around us. The only problem is they're not asking us out. When I was single, I would go to these Catholic events and I could see the dating potential all around me, but it was very far and few between that I would be asked out. And now we just want to say, and I'd just like to say, to the men who did ask me out and who did muster up the courage, and to you have asked a girl out in the last month or in the last 2 months, and it didn't work out, we just want to say, as women, thank you. Thank you so much. We appreciate you. We appreciate the courage that that took. And we are so sorry if it didn't work out or if you were taken. But you know what? Jason Evatt was in Sydney last week, and I followed him all around Sydney, and he said something that really stood out to me. He said, men, if you ask a woman out, you are taking the burden of fear and rejection off her and onto yourself. And that is a beautiful thing. And I want you to change your way of looking at asking, initiating relationships. Did you know Thomas Edison had over 1,000 attempts before he found the correct element to invent the light bulb? When asked if he was disheartened at all the failed attempts, he said, no, I am one element closer to finding the right one. My dear men, each date that doesn't work out, you are one step closer to finding your future bride. Turn the fear of rejection into a positive. Do not be afraid. It repeats that many times in scriptures. Do not be afraid. Pop culture has taught us as women, if he's not asking you out, then he's just not that into you. So if you are not asking us out, we as women are assuming you are just not interested in us. Good men are not hard to find, ladies and gentlemen, but women shouldn't be doing the searching. Good men, you know the girl you're interested in, so ask her out.
Is the time keeper, are we ready?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, urban theologians, I'd just like to go and address some of the inaccuracies put forward tonight by the first speaker of negative. Just look at the term negative. Negative in nature and negative in the theme here tonight. If guys aren't asking girls out, so does that not suggest we haven't quite reached that good man status yet? They're not. You said that's not good enough. Maybe they're not good enough. And before, you suggested, how many girls in the room have been asked out lately and you asked for people to do a show of hands? There are less than 10 girls who have been asked out recently, and they've probably been asked out by the same bloke, and that was probably me. Tonight, friends, urban theologians, we are debating why a good man is hard to find. And this is because women have blurred our understanding of what a good man is, thus leaving a man incapable of being that sacrificing team captain that he wants to become. By setting the standard of what type of guy they're going to go out with, women set the standard as to the type of man men around them will aim for. Unfortunately, many women these days have not set standards that foster the growth of good men. Firstly, some women have set their standards so low that men do not need to be a good man to reach them. Look at Britney Spears, girl to Gudrun. And half the, there's lots of people I could go on. These lowering standards in society has prompted many women to set up a defence mechanisms, which makes it very hard for good men to get to know them. We must work out ways of breaking down these unnecessary defences. On the other hand, some women have let the superficial mentality of a secular society alter their image of what an actual good man is. Although they want to marry a good man, originally defined by David, they also want to marry a guy who's extremely good looking, who earns lots of money, and is outrageously funny. So what has happened is that men to mean to be good men, as described by David, plus have all these extra superficial qualities. This standard is impossible to reach, so men have given up trying.
has stated in Kristalina Evert's book on pure womanhood, some women who think of themselves as independent and liberated deny that need for male approval. They see it as a weakness. Perhaps because of lowering standards in society, they confuse the vulnerability of being open to love as weakness. In reality, it takes strength, wisdom, trust and courage to be open to the risks of love. It is not a weakness to desire love, ladies. The weakness is when we settle for less than love. She says, instead of looking for the ideal man, become the ideal woman and let him find you. Continuing David's theme, men will be good men when women recognise they need to achieve completion in their lives. Men can be leaders. They can be strong if given the opportunity. This is hard to do if they're treated as a thought or if they are superfluous. Some women may think that they don't need men today. They have their own income. They can start their own family by artificial means without a man. I think such women, which aren't the women in the room here tonight, have deprived themselves of the experience of the love and affection which a happy married couple enjoy each and every day. Even though Julia Gillard may claim that she's happy to leave her relationship with Tim as it is, he seems to think otherwise. Her confusing messages of love and marriage have clearly undermined her success as a politician, not because of her flawed policy platform, but if you see the recent polls, which are taken in marginal seats and seats all around Australia, which have families, everyday working families, as she's dubbed, they want her to espouse and aspire to family values and to have a loving and good relationship. The singer Beyonce claims that the girls run the world, and that's a song. I think this is an application of the old saying that the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. So if women rule the world, where does it leave us men? Despite this, some women complain of the difficulty in getting men to commit to marriage. Now, why would a man commit to this if he's not being valued of what he can bring to a relationship? Isn't he just seen as another handbag to go around and around? The old Jack Jones song, for all those people in the room, you might know, Gordo, you might know this, the old wives and lovers, urge the wives should always be lovers too, and avoid sending men off into the world while they have their hair still in curlers, or they may not see them again. Now, this is contrasted by Helen Reddy's feminist war cry, "I am woman, hear me roar," which has been influenced many modern women. If modern women are happy to personify the king of the jungle, what they're doing is requiring men to act like lion tamers with a whip and still to control this angry cat. How can you be compassionate or make a woman around you feel safe with a whip in your hand? Look, friends, urban theologians, really. Modern women have altered the image of good men so much so that they've blurred the picture, leaving good men confused as to what it means to be mature into a good man. When a woman sets the standards and allows a good man to fulfil his role, then he truly feels safe in her presence. If more women practice this, there will be more good men around. Thank you.
Finding the women. Ladies and gentlemen, I just have a few objections to what we've been presented with from the Affirmative this evening. First of all, where to start? They seem to have this very skewed picture of what women are these days. They presented this argument that women are the same, are increasingly the same as men, and all things essentially male, and therefore men don't really know how to respond to them, and it's really difficult to be a man. Well, have I ever heard a bigger bunch of whiners in my life? Guys, women are still women. Sure, some we work now. Don't get so afraid about that. Women who work still want to get asked out. Newsflash. I've got some nods over here. Thank you. So what is it exactly that men are objecting to about women having changed over the past century? Because surely we have. In a lot of things, we have changed. Are you objecting to the fact that we work? Are you objecting to the fact that we get an education? Just what is it? Where would you rather us be? Essentially, despite what the affirmative is saying to you today, ladies and gentlemen, we know, women in the audience know, and the good men in here know, that women have not changed in who we are. Sure, in what we do, but in who we are and what we want and what we crave and what we long for, that hasn't changed. Despite the fact that I work, of course I want to be a mother and a wife one day. There are very few women who don't at some point realise this. Others not at the same time as others, but it is an essential part of being a woman. So let's ask, why did women become more masculine? Why did feminism start? And it's because there was a vacuum. World War I, that's when women stepped up. And feminism didn't happen just because women got up one day and said, I feel undervalued. They actually did feel undervalued. There was a root cause of all this. You look at women who have been abandoned by their husbands. They need to step in and take the male role, not because they want to, but because there's a vacuum. Women aren't the reason that we've had to step up and take male roles. It's the men's fault. So let's just get that clear. Women don't want to be men. We are who we are. Men just perceive us different, and that's not our fault, okay? Now, another part of their case is hinged hugely on the fact that women have this huge influence over women. Something like they seem to depict themselves as mindless fools who don't have any control over what they do. Well, I'm sorry, I don't accept that at all. You look, essentially, women are under huge pressure by a lot of standards, and we behave differently. There's a vast spectrum of women. But can I just take the two examples that the first speaker gave us? Eve. Eve only did what she did because the man failed to communicate that God said, don't eat the apple. And Bathsheba, my goodness, typical essential woman who was alone. Alone and felt like she had to conform to some societal standard. The king had this weird right over her anyway. Bathsheba is not your quintessential woman. I'd like to fast forward to Sex and the City, ladies and gentlemen. You have two very stereotypical pictures of women in Charlotte and Samantha. Charlotte is a woman they think that we've all, that has lowered the standards. Sorry, Samantha is. Charlotte's the one who holds out, you know, who's a bit more virtuous. And how many dates does Charlotte get? She's the one who's always pining for a date. The fact that we don't act more virtuous is simply because men aren't choosing the virtuous women, and that is not our fault. And as much as we try to change that, we can't do it. Only men can break the cycle. And so, ladies and gentlemen, I'll move on to my case. Now, by and large, a lot of the disagreement between the two teams here is because of different psychologies between men and women. And not just the different psychologies, but our failure to understand those things. So let's clear it up a little bit, because I appreciate that female psychology can at times sometimes seem like Princess Beatrix's wedding hat. Tortuous, convoluted, pointless, and a little bit hard to handle. But I don't blame you, because really, pretty much every woman in this world has had a long-term crush on either Mr. Darcy, Gilbert Blythe, Heathcliff, Wuthering Heights, Aragorn, or even Eric from The Little Mermaid. And if you meet all of them. So it must seem pretty hard to compete with these tall, dark, handsome guys, and I appreciate it's a little bit intimidating, guys, but let's take a little bit of a closer look at Mr. Darcy, that pesky Mr. Darcy, that lake-diving wet shirt wearing. £10,000 a year earning. In vain have I struggled, if will not do, you must allow me to tell you how ugly I admire and love you, Mr. Darcy. First of all, the man wore jodhpurs. Secondly, his sideburns were ridiculously long. Thirdly, he was unemployed. Fourthly, social retard. Fifthly, not exactly a last-minute kind of guy. He doesn't have moves like Jerome Smith on the dance floor at all. And his name was Fitzwilliam. What's my point? He was a loser. But girls love him. And why do we love him? Because the man was consistent in his love for a woman. He was a virtuous man. He saw past all the faults in the woman that he loved, allowed himself to become a virtuous man because of his love for her, and he laid down his life for her. That's why we love him. He was a virtuous man. So do we expect you to be eloquent men who can say things like, in vain have I struggled, will not do, you must allow me to tell you how ugly and admire I love you. Frankly, I'd be freaked out if someone said that to me. Do we expect you to be bear grills and jump on the top of an alligator and suffocate it, having eaten only locusts that day? I'm going to say no. Don't be fooled by any of these men. The fundamental truth about women is, first and foremost, that we need to feel loved and we need to feel wanted, and we need to hear it, just as we are. And there are a few reasons why most women have an inherent woundedness by the time we reach womanhood, and to explain those might need a book longer than Dr. Dave Chapman's PhD thesis. But we do have this deep yearning to feel beautiful and to feel loved. There's a reason why Bruno Mars's pivotal song last year, Just the Way You Are, stayed at number one for so long. And it's longer... It stayed there for a long time, and it's because it spoke to women's heart. So is it really that simple? Well, yes, it is. But I grant you that women sometimes are a little bit confused. We've grown up on this, you know, diet of crushes and fictional men, and sometimes we don't know exactly what we want when it's right in front of us. Sometimes when Mr. Right comes along, it doesn't, you know, light bulbs don't go off. Sometimes you need to spend a bit of time getting to know us, getting us to trust you, pursuing us, we need to be wooed. And just on that note, stalking versus wooing. Wooing, praying for a woman every day. Stalking, leaving dead roses on the doorstep. Not cool. So men, faced with these two psychologies, the psychology of men, psychology of women, who has the burden? The man who wants to lay down his life or the woman who needs to feel loved? You guys have the power to break the cycle we're talking about. We can do as much as we want. If we can be less picky or whatever, not work or whatever you want. You guys are the only ones who can break the cycle. So men, what are you doing?
Do you lay down your life? Do you lay down your life?
Ladies and gentlemen, it falls on me, the third speaker, to close our argument and to rebut these silly proposals put forward by these three beautiful ladies here. Now, gentlemen, honestly, which of you would not ask one of these ladies out? No man has answered. And I say, well, they are taken. And so perhaps I understand they could believe that, yes, there are good men out there because they're all taken. But many of you would know, many of you women particularly would know that not all men do measure up. And we admit that. We as the affirmative admit that. But I can also understand that you ask, well, how then is it a woman's fault? And I repeat what our first two speakers have told you of. Modern women have altered the image of a good man. They have. And they've altered it so much that it has left many men confused, if not incapable, of maturing into a good man, of measuring up to that standard that they put to us tonight. Now, we're not blaming women necessarily as people. You have to realise here that we're talking about many, many cultural factors, the rise of feminism. There's so many things going on here that are hard to pinpoint. But we say that it's the women's role to repudiate these changes that have made it difficult for men. Women need to clear the air, and that's what we want to do here tonight. We want to make it easier to clarify what exactly needs to happen. Now, the practical consequence of all this, of this culture particularly, is that men, as David said, are either not needed, or as Jerome said, unable to establish good relationships because women are not receptive. Now, they speak of themselves as perfectly ready, perfectly receptive. Women, you know, the princess in the castle, ready for the knight to come along. You just got to man up, get on the horse, and do it. Well, I say, no, ladies, you're amazing. You're all amazing, but I say a lot of you aren't quite ready, and that's what we're asking of you. We're saying, let's ask the question. Let's stop talking about men manning up, and let's ask ourselves whether perhaps women have to do their part as well. And we believe that this is not just opinion. There's a theological basis to this. Dave spoke about this, the need for the complementarity between men and women, which many of you here are familiar with. He quoted John Paul II, and I'll return to him later. But to come back to some of the things that our previous speakers have mentioned, women, they seem to believe, well, I think the most powerful argument they believe is that women bemoan our unwillingness to initiate these days. They long for the old days when, as someone I think I heard quoted, Jason Evatt said in his grandmother's time,
every woman had been proposed to 10 times in, I don't know, a space of 2 weeks or something like that. After the war. Now, it's not that simple these days, is it, guys? You can't just walk up to a woman and propose. I mean, let's be honest. And there are all sorts of reasons why. And I'll give you a few. I'll tell you a story of a young man who was interested in a girl not so long ago. And he went around, he was essentially trying to find out if this girl was number one. He couldn't even figure out whether she was single, despite asking, you know, various people. It wasn't like the days of Pride and Prejudice, where, you know, the mother kind of walked in and presented her daughters, and it was pretty clear they were all available. It doesn't happen anymore. She certainly wasn't wearing a sign on her forehead. And it's just not the same. And we say that many of the changes in society that have happened are good ones, but clearly there are some that have complicated the situation. And so we admit we do have to ask women out, but we're saying you also have to change the culture to allow us to do that more easily. Now, there was some mention of Bathsheba. I didn't quite get that point. I think the fact is that she was being quite immodest. And I think the reality was is that she didn't have to be there bathing as she was. She could have been a Susanna and said no. Bear Grylls. Well, Bear Grylls is not, as much as I like him, not our definition of a good man, so I'll leave that point there. Sex in the City. I've never watched an episode, so I really can't rebut that. I rest my case. Now, to finish on a few beautiful quotes, and I want this to be a positive thing. I'm sorry if I haven't been funny enough. I'm sorry if I haven't kind of, you know, ticked all the boxes, as women often want us to do. I want to finish on a positive note, and a quote which David made reference to. John Paul II, the Blessed John Paul II. From the second, he quotes in Mulier Simitatum, the Second Vatican Council declares in its closing message, the hour is coming, in fact has come, when the vocation of women is being acknowledged in its fullness, the hour in which women acquire in the world an influence, an effect, and a power never hitherto achieved. That is why, at this moment, when the human race is undergoing so deep a transformation, women imbued with the spirit of the gospel can do so much to aid humanity in not falling. And I say, with the power that women have today, and you do have power, comes great responsibility. Another John Paul II quote. He says, on the other hand, he's speaking now about the incarnation. On the other hand, however, the event at Nazareth highlights a form of union with the living God which can only belong to the woman. He talks about the God relying on a woman for a salvific event. In a sense, woman as the initiator. And while we do acknowledge again, men have to initiate, women have to be ready. There has to be a standard. And we know that the Virgin Mary was ready, was she not? Finally, Jason Evatt, the man that all women here love to hear talk about women and about how bad men are. Well, this is what he has to say. He quotes Fulton J. Sheen. When a man loves a woman, he has to become worthy of her. The higher her virtue, the more a man has to aspire to be worthy of her. The history of civilization could actually be written in terms of the level of its women. Jason Evatt, ladies and gentlemen. He goes on to summarise. He says, women, men look at you to learn how to be treated. And finally, when a culture of ladies arises, a culture of gentlemen will follow. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Tonight with an affirmative, who have told the women in this room to man up. And that's what we're faced with as we sit here tonight. Man up, women. And then we're told by the first that actually women are taking all of men's roles. And so we're a little bit confused about who's doing the blurring of what it means to be a good man in tonight's debate. So we think tonight's debate has come down to three questions. The first one being, are there good men? The second one being, if there aren't, which we disagree with, are women to blame for this? And finally, where's the burden? Who has to make the change? Who's first to man up? Okay, so first of all, are good men hard to find? And I think Laura did a pretty good job of pointing to Jerome's dashingly handsome suit tonight, and David's recently acquired PhD. So I think that what we've seen here tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is that actually these guys are single. So, and they're good men here, ready. And I'm a little bit offended if you don't think there's anyone who's worthy in this audience tonight. So, we think there are good men, first and foremost. But for the sake of debate, we'll move there and we'll say that, like, the lines have been blurred and basically women are to blame for this because they've been blurring the lines. Now, they've stated from the very beginning that where do we get this picture? Well, Jesus Christ has set us an example of what a good man is. So we have a quick fix for the asinine that they should go home and read their Bibles. And then we think as well that when we see men in our society who are like these men, who are good men, who stand up to this, that this is also what needs to happen to promote good men. Now, are women to blame? So we've heard three things about this. We've heard that, like, first of all, there's this competition. Second of all, this blurring. And third, this feminist thinking. So Dave talks about how, like, women are sort of taking men's roles and there's this sort of competition between men and women who's going to be the better man in society. And we assume that he was talking about things like economic independence and stuff like that. Well, we think that the more important issues here are, like, service and the warrior-like nature of men and that kind of thing. And we think if there's going to be a competition to be who's more masculine and it's between a woman and a man loses, we don't think that's necessarily a problem with the woman. We think that in society, if there's a competition of who's going to be the best man and the man loses, that's something you need to be looking at yourselves. But second of all, we think that, like, when they talk about whether the culture's been blurred, we heard these generalisations about women who've got their standards too low and women who've got their standards too high, and the first one's Jerome won't ask out, and the second one's Jerome won't ask out. This, we think that this is, like, quite typically an excuse that is used for guys who are thirdly intimidated by the perception that has been created by feminism. And we don't necessarily hold that feminism has changed women. In fact, we firmly reject that feminism has changed who women are. We think that women can be women in the workplace, and they contribute to the workplace by bringing sensitivity and receptivity and all of those things, and making it better by being women in those areas. And we think that because we now have PhD candidates on our education panel, doesn't mean that women aren't doing these things in a womanly way. We think that what that means is that men are perceiving that women are taking their ground, when actually what women want is still the same. They want to be happy, they want to be loved, they want to be told they're beautiful, and all of those things. So where does that leave us? Whose role is it tonight? So we've talked about this burden and where it lies. And we've talked about the altered image of a good man. And we disagree. We think that we all have the benefit here tonight, some of us do anyway, that we know the truth about the human person. And we've heard it from both sides. We both agree that a man is courageous and needs to step up and wants to be a good man and wants to sacrifice and lay down his life. And we've heard that women want to be receptive and they want to be open to being asked out and they want to be told they're beautiful and all of these things, and they want to be sensitive and person-centred and all of those things. And we've all agreed that there are these essential truths about men and women that maintain themselves through the ages. Now let's just look at this for a second. You've got, on the one hand, like, the creator God who is masculine and comes from without and creates. And it's him taking the first step. He can't do anything. The world can't do anything without God taking the first step. Christ did not wait for his church to be perfect. He didn't wait for his disciples to come along with him to the cross before he laid down his life and sacrificed.
And we'd say that this is the image that you have given us of what a good man is. And this is the image that we want to take home tonight. That it is the man who steps up first, who asks the woman out, and who lays down his life. Okay? And this is what we're not seeing. So when we come to this fundamental question of whose role is it, whose responsibility have we got in this debate tonight? If the image is blurred, whose role is it to fix it? And Gabe came out and he said, basically, it's the woman's role. She can fix it. She's got to start clearing the airways. That kind of thing. Well, we'd say that when it comes to, like, society's confusing messages in public, popular culture and all that stuff, probably we're both as responsible as one another. We're both buying the stupid magazines that tell us stupid things to do. And we're both feeding off this popular culture that we're all responsible for creating. But as Christians, we're always swimming against the current. We're always swimming against what media is telling us to do. And we're always doing things that don't go with the popular culture towards feminism and that kind of thing. And so what we'd say then is when we're given this model of receptivity versus sacrifice, the case is clear cut. Men's role, if they want to take it on, is to serve, to lay down their life, and they need to step up and man up and be the men we know that they'll be. Thank you.
One big hand for all of our debaters here tonight. Don't worry. You're going to have a chance to choose some more. We're now going to take about a 10-minute recess. Now, Sonia and Justine have got... Okay, so here's how it's going to work. As I mentioned, you are all going to be voting tonight. Okay? And the way it works is each of you should already have, and if you don't, put your hands up and Justine and Sonia will come around. Each of you has a green and a red ticket. If you thought that the affirmative team here won the debate, you will put the green ticket into the bag that the girls are carrying around. If you thought that the negative team here won the debate tonight, you will put the red ticket in the basket, in the bags that are going around tonight. There are also, guys, this is important because it's going to be a pretty dull 20 minutes afterwards if you don't do this. There are pads of paper on all of your tables with pens. Also, put your questions for the teams in those bags. So Sonia and Justine are going to go around now, and we're going to come back in about 10 minutes.
Radio.org.au